Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions. Welcome to the URN Radio Show. I'm the Mouth from the South, the Paranormal Outlaw, and joining me tonight is Mr. Matt, CPR Matt. What is up?
Hey, how's it going, man? How you doing?
Doing good, man, doing good. Trying to make sure my dog doesn't kill my new cat.
Yeah, that's... I wasn't expecting that response, but okay.
Well, I got my cat's whining. She's only 6 weeks old and a little kitten. She can fit in the palm of my hand. And my dog is playing with her right now, but I'm making sure she doesn't harm her. So, yeah.
So, how's your weekend been, man?
I've been on call for work, so pretty much stuck here at the house. We had some terrible, terrible thunderstorms today, pouring ass rain. We probably had 5 inches of rain, and my roof decided to leak in my kitchen. So I had buckets everywhere. So yeah.
So sounds like a good time.
Oh yeah. Well, it's not my problem. I got to call the landlord, and it'll be. Their problem. But other than that, man, it finally took me a week to recover after my little vacation I took last weekend. And, man, that was crazy. Crazy. I went to Mud Nationals, which is a four-wheeler basically like Mardi Gras mixed with mud. And there was about 14,000 people all camped out. And needless to say, I got lots of footage. Lots of footage.
You have to YouTube that shit, then. you have to YouTube that.
Yeah, lots of footage of lots of females doing things for bees.
Ah, so it was boring then, is what you're saying.
No, it went downhill when I started hanging out with a four-wheeler group out of Louisiana, and they brought about 50 jars of moonshine. Yeah, it went downhill pretty quick.
In more ways than one, right?
Yeah, in more ways than one. I didn't know how much of a jackass I was until I watched the video back and you listened to me talking in the background. Yeah, I'm pretty bad off. Your motion EVPs have nothing on what I was saying.
Yeah, well... As long as you had lotion, that's all that matters. That is going to haunt me for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, and poor Matt, he's got to fill in for Jody on Tuesday, help me out on Tuesday night, and then he's got his own show on Wednesday.
Yes, and I'll be on Onyx Radio on Thursday, along with Dennis.
Oh. Oh, you're being interviewed on Thursday?
Oh yeah.
All right.
We're gonna continue last Thursday's show, which I hope that I didn't offend anybody on Onyx Radio. When we were talking about Bigfoot, I kind of have a disbelief in that realm.
But, well, you tuned into the right show tonight, then, my friend.
Uh-oh. Why?
Yeah.
What we got on deck tonight?
Well, you'll just have to let the gentleman tell his story. I mean, he's got a very intriguing story. He had an encounter with a Bigfoot. And it was like 20 years ago that he had this horrific encounter. And, you know, being a hunter and being in the South, because he's from Louisiana, you can get a lot of ridicule. You know what I'm saying? When you go around telling folks you saw Bigfoot and had, you know. So he's kind of kept quiet, and now that Bigfoot's gotten more, I won't say accepted, but more popular as far as television shows and whatnot, he's come out with his story, and there's actually been a movie made based on some of his accounts. And so we're going to have the producer, writer of the movie also on tonight. But yeah, he's got I talked to him on the phone Friday night, and he's a really good guy. And, you know, I've never had an encounter with Bigfoot as far as seeing it, but I have had an encounter with one as far as the things that happened to me. And when I described him to Ken Gerhardt, who's a very reputable cryptozoologist and friend of mine, and what I described to him, he said, dude, you had an encounter with a Bigfoot. So, you know, it is what it is. I believe anything's possible until you give me definite proof that this doesn't exist. I'm all for it. It's kind of like UFOs. If somebody can tell me that we're the only people in the entire universe based on scientific fact, then I will believe that. But until then, anything and everything's possible, because of all the crazy stuff I've seen in the paranormal, I believe a lot of things are possible. It's just,
oh yeah,
you know, everybody has their experiences, and me being in East Texas, and the gentleman's only 80 miles from where I'm at. So he is also in the hotbed of Bigfoot sightings. I'm in the most sightings being reported out of the state of Texas. And since, you know, we are the second largest state, there's a lot of Bigfoot sightings in my area. And even Ken verified that when I had him on the show. He said, dude, we're always getting Bigfoot reporting sightings from your area of Texas because of we're in the piney woods. So we got thick wood forest all around. It's natural forest and whatnot. So that's why there's a lot of hunters, just like our guest tonight. He's an avid deer hunter. And, you know, he wasn't going out looking for Bigfoot. He was out hunting for deer when this account happened. So
see, I want to go on record saying that I believe that it's possible. I just don't believe of anything that's been found so far is credible in the actual world as far as the science world goes.
Right.
Everything's been discounted.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible?
Well, it's kind of like us, Matt, when it comes to paranormal, you know. We've had some really great evidence, but when you throw it into the scientific community, nothing there is anything that scientists would validate saying, yes, there's an afterlife. You know what I'm saying? So,
oh, no,
yeah,
I totally agree with that.
I definitely understand. Yeah. It's the same thing in the Bigfoot community, you know. There hasn't been anything to just come out that says, yes, these things exist. But at the same time, you know, they could exist. Like Ken talked about when he was on the show that they're discovering new species all the time, every day, of different animals. They're discovering animals they thought were extinct that are still existing. So when it comes to nature, yes, there could be this is possible, but it's also one of those fields, just like UFOs. UFOs and Bigfoot, cryptozoology, Bigfoot sightings can be hoaxed a lot. You know, they're hoaxed. They can be hoaxed in ghost hunting too, but it seems like there's more and more people out there that can try to fool somebody when it comes to UFOs or Bigfoot.
Well, it's also easier to hoax something that is visibly seen versus something that is, you know, oh, look at that vapor in the air, or look at this, and you know how much I love orbs.
Yeah.
But, you know, look at this orb. Look at, it's, I don't know. It is easier to hoax something in the cryptozoology field than it is in the paranormal field.
Right.
In my opinion.
Definitely. Definitely. And for folks out there that are wondering, Jeff is not going to be with us tonight. Thoughts and prayers go out to him and his family. He lost his grandmother earlier in the week, so he's dealing with that. So he's not going to be with us tonight. And Martin, he's had to take a leave of absence from the show. He's had to undertake a second job working weekends. So Matt has graciously volunteered to step in as the other host besides myself and Jeff. So that's what we got going on.
Unfortunately, I appreciate the welcome, but unfortunately everybody has to deal with me.
Oh, yeah. And an announcement before I go in reading the bios and whatnot. Next Sunday will be 3 years that this show, this was the very first original show on the network. 3 years next week is our anniversary. And that was the spawning of the URN Radio Network. So we're going to have, I invited all the radio show hosts to come on board and just have a good old-fashioned melee, talk about whatever, see if any of the past guests of any of the radio shows want to call in and just say hello to us or whatnot or make fun of us. So it doesn't matter. But, yeah.
You know for sure I'll be there.
Well, you know, it seems like this year's flown by, dude, because it was like last year I was talking about the 2-year anniversary, and now we're going on 3. And your show will have an anniversary this summer.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's crazy.
It seriously doesn't seem like that long.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Not at all, but it just flies by. And so let me all right, don't kill my cat, dog. Stop that. All right. I don't have kids. I have pets that act like kids.
Yes, they do.
Wow. Here's our bio for tonight. Our guests tonight are Mike Woolley and Debbie King McMartin. Mike Woolley lives in a small town named Petrie, Louisiana. It's 15 minutes south of Shreveport, Louisiana. His enthusiasm for hunting started at the tender age of 6 years old as he tagged along with his dad while he squirrel hunted. At the age of 15, his interest turned into deer hunting. On one cold Saturday in December 1981 while hunting, a doe ran under his deer stand while she was being chased by a Bigfoot. Little did he know that it'd be a life-changing event for him. He kept this locked inside of him for 20 years. He didn't want to tell anybody about this until recently when the rash of Bigfoot sightings and encounters gave him the courage to share his story. His encounter became the inspiration, I'm going to scroll down here, for the movie Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot. Debbie King McMartin is an author, screenwriter, and independent film producer. Her nonfiction works include the book and screenplay co-authored with Evelyn L. Morgan, titled Stone Justice, The True Story of the Only Woman Ever Executed in an Electric Chair in Louisiana, and the last woman to ever be executed. The screenplay was a winner in the 2002 Writer's Digest Writing Competition Division. The story rights to the book and script were sold to River Green Productions and produced a feature film titled The Pardon, starring Jamie King and Jason Lewis. Miss McMartin served as the production coordinator, for the award-winning documentary titled Missing, Presumed Dead, by Hollywood filmmaker Bill Dumas and narrated by Ed Asner. She also served as producer of the accolade award-winning documentary Dreamers and Gamblers, Spirit of the Pioneer Wildcatters. She's currently serving as co-writer, producer for Skookum, The Hunt for Bigfoot, now in post-production. And those are our guests tonight, and I believe we have them on the phone. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Go ahead.
How are you doing?
Doing real good. How y'all doing?
Yeah, doing all right. How you doing?
All just hanging in here on a rainy Sunday.
Y'all get a lot of rain over there? I know we got hammered here in Longview.
Yeah, we could float an ark over here.
I'm sitting outside enjoying a beer, and of course I'd have to wear a coat because it's Chicago area, but we got clear skies.
We don't. It's just still raining.
Well, Mike, I read a little bit, about you to everyone out there listening. You want to talk about, leading up to your sighting, and then talk about, your encounter that you had that day, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, okay. Back in December of 1981. I was working the evening shift at a local plant, a wood lumber plant at the hometown where I lived. And I would get off at 11 o'clock at night, go home, get a little sleep, get up about 4 o'clock. And at 5:30, I'd be on my deer stand every morning, and I'd hunt about 11. And I'd go home and get a bite to eat and take me 2 or 3 hour nap and go to work. On the weekend, I was off on Saturday and Sunday, and I hunted 12, 15 hours a day on Saturday and Sunday. Well, I was going to go hunting one Friday evening, I went in, did my shift, got off work, 11, and I went home, and I was going to get up early next morning and go deer hunting. Well, something happened, and I overslept, and I woke up about 9:30, I can't remember the exact time, but I was real frustrated and kind of mad at myself, for waking up so late. But we had a hectic, stressful week at work, and I think it just caught up with me. But anyway, I said, I got some things I need to do around the house and chores and whatnot, and I'll just do that, catch up on that, and I'll just go make an evening hunt. I'll salvage part of the day. Well, I got through and headed out. And got to the woods around 3:10, 3:15, 3 o'clock, something like that. And I went down a main highway and turned off on a secondary road into the game reserve where I hunted. And once I turned off the main highway, I went about a mile on the secondary road, and there was this old logging road to the left. It went back a mile back in the woods and dead-ended. And what I would do, I'd drive my pickup truck about halfway point. There was a turnaround. I think that's much worse when they logged it years and years ago. They loaded their logs out because they make an opening when they do that. And I turned my truck around, headed out. I always tell everybody, always have your vehicle turned around, heading out in case you got an emergency and you can get out of there quick. Well, I did that, and what I would do, I would walk back to my deer stand, you know, down the logging road, because I could be real quiet, you know, and sneak in there. And my deer stand, I lean to deer stand ladder. It's a ladder with a seat on it that you lean up against a tree and you tie it off, keep it from falling over. But anyway, I had it down there at the end of the logging road, so walked back there, got on the stand, looked at my watch. I think it was 3:30, something like that. I don't know. But anyway, I've probably been on the deer stand 45 minutes, and it was a really bluebird day. Not a cloud in the sky. Temperature was running between 30-35, and no wind. A good day of hunt. So about 45 minutes after I'd been on my stand, this little I was looking at my stand was facing north, 12 o'clock. This little young doe, I mean real young. Nah, I don't even know if she weighed 50 pounds, but she come running from the east, maybe 3 o'clock position, and run up under my deer stand and just literally laid down. Okay, and I'm sitting thinking, you know, deer don't come to your deer stand and run away from your deer stand. You know, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life, and I've been deer hunting for a long, long time, you know. Well, anyway, I looked at her, and as I raised my head back up to look, you know, north over that way, out of my peripheral vision, I saw something. And as I was turning my head, well, finally, when I turned my head enough that I saw something. It was a blur at first, but after I turned my head, I saw this great big, huge-looking gorilla-looking thing jump. He was at the 2 o'clock position. He was standing behind a tree. By the time I looked, he was hopping. He jumped from 2 o'clock position to another tree and landed at the base of that tree. It must have been 20 feet. It had to be 20 feet. I mean, I never seen nothing hop that far in my life. Well, I got to looking at it, and it was standing behind a tree looking at me. It must have been about 15 yards, you know, less than 50 feet away. And, you know, it wasn't nothing obstructing the view. It was pretty clean, you know, through there up to that point. And I got to looking at it, and I said, my God, you know, am I seeing things? You know, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it was this big, tall, 7 to 8 foot tall, 400-500 pound creature standing there looking at me, black, hairy black. And it was really giving me a paid off look, you know. And I got to looking at it, and I got my brain just started flooding my system with questions, and it was answering real fast, like, is there a circus in town? No. Is a girl escaped from somewhere? No. Just all kind of stuff. And so I started looking at it, and it was staring at me, looking at me up and down, you know, and I'm thinking, you know what, there's some hunter done slipped in here and got a gorilla outfit, and he's trying to scare me off my deer stand. Well, you know, back in 1981, you could hunt on these large timber company land, like Boise Southern, Boise Cascade, Willamette, Warehouse, or all those big companies had thousands of acres of land, and you could hunt on it, no charge, first come, first serve. Well, back then, what people would do, they would do their best. If they wanted your woods, your part of the woods where you hunted, they would leave you nasty notes on your deer stand. They would tear your deer stand down, pull all kind of tricks on you. Well, I thought this was a trick. And so I started talking to this thing. I talked to it 4 or 5 minutes. I told him, I said, you need to get out of here. You need to take that head off that costume, you know, or you're going to suffer the consequences. Well, as I was talking to him, he kept looking at me, you know, looking at my face, you know, my lips, like he was trying to read my lips, and he was looking at my feet. He'd look at me halfway up, stop, and then he'd look all the other way up, stop, and down again. Well, I got thinking. I said, if that's a human, how could he have jumped that 20 feet? And then something else popped my mind. I said, you know, where he come from? I'm trying to go back there to go deer hunting, but I can't because it's grown up so bad. I mean, it had them big old thorn trees. It had them big 4 and 5 inch thorns on them. I mean, briars that were tight, man, it was tight. You couldn't get back there. I don't know how a dog could get back there. And I tried. And something told me right then, I said, you know, something ain't right here, you know. And, well, this rocked on for a few more minutes. And I got to thinking, I said, you know, I really don't know what to do. You know, I always say, you know, close your eyes and take a deep breath for a minute or so, and everything will be all right. And that's what I did. I thought, maybe I'm just dreaming or something. I don't know if I did that, and lo and behold, he's still standing there looking at me, you know, just the biggest day. Well, I got to thinking. I said, I don't know what to shoot this thing or walk away, you know. Well, I took my rifle. I had a 270 deer rifle with a 3x9 scope, pretty good scope. And I turned my scope down at 3-power because, you know, he was so close to me. I didn't want to blur it when I looked through it. I raised my scope and I looked through it. You know, I put the crosshairs right between his eyes. Well, anyway, I got to looking, and, you know, on a cold day, you know how you'll blow steam and mist out of your nostrils and your mouth when you're breathing. And he was doing that. And I got to looking at his eyes, you know, and his teeth, and he was clicking his teeth at me. He kept showing me his teeth. He showed me his teeth 6 or 7 times, and then he would click them at me. And so I knew right then, when I saw it, I said, my God, this is real. I thought it was a feral human because I'd been reading about him. And he got really, really mad at me for pointing that rifle at him. I could hear him. He was going, rrr, 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 in a low tone. He was kind of had a low growl at me. I said, oh, my God. You know, I said, what have I done? You know, I'm in a situation here. Well, he let out a real loud roar at me when I pointed that rifle. It sounded like a lion. I mean, it was just roar. You know what I mean? I can't. It's horrible. Well, over to the northeast of him, I'd say 50, 75 yards, a sharp whistle came back. And he looked over that way. And he looked at me with a sheepish grin, and he'd give another whistle back, shrill whistle back to whoever whistled to him. Well, I've heard that whistle 1,000 times in the woods. I always thought it was a bird, you know, but now I know it was some kind of signal these creatures used. Well, I heard movement. I heard footprints coming from that direction. I said, oh, my God, he's calling in the reserve, you know. I knew I had to do something, either stay there, have a shootout, which I knew I would lose because it ain't no telling how many more would pile in there on top of me, you know, or run. So I chose number 2, to run. Well, I got about halfway down my deer stand, and I just jumped. It was 10-foot stand. I just jumped. I couldn't help it. You know, I was back then, 1981, about 25 years old, 150 pounds, light. I could move, but my legs felt like they weighed 150 pounds. But while I was also on that deer stand, when he growled at me and I was looking at him through the scope, I broke out in a cold, clammy sweat. I got real nauseated. My throat got dry. My stomach got tore up. You know, you heard the old saying where your knees are knocking and your teeth are rattling. Well, mine was doing that. I was just scared. Never in my life been that scared, but I was that day. I started running to the west down that log road, back to my truck. And as soon as I took off, I got a glance over to the left, and he was flanking me. He was chasing me to the left, to the south of me. And golly, the way he was tearing down brush and trees, he was bulldozing it, just bulldozing it. He was taking his arms and just bulldozing it. When he was standing behind the tree before we took off running, looking at me, right there at the end, I told you he got so mad, he started beating on the tree. I mean, it was a pretty good-sized tree. He was shaking it and beating on it. And I said, oh, my God, you know, I'm dead. Well, we were running along there, and he was growling. I could hear him, you know, roar. He was just son of King Kong, you know, knocking trees out of the way, bulldozing brush. I said, he wants to be bad. Well, I see my truck coming up, and I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be the end. You know, it's going to be Dodge City. You know, somebody's going to die today. You know, and I got to think about my family. My little boy is about 5 years old. I could see his face and my wife and, you know, all the things I loved. And I got to thinking, oh, man, this must be an omen for death. Well, I got up to the tailgate of my truck, and I thought, oh, my God. I said, you know, I got to stick my key in and lock the truck to get into it. So I can get away from here, and he's going to get me. So I swung around to the left, and I fired a shot. Man, I didn't even aim. I just swung around, you know, from the hip. And this is something off it, where the bullet hit right about 7-8 foot off the ground. His head was about 3 foot from that tree as he was running. If he would have been another second and a half, that bullet would have caught him probably in the head. Well, I got in my truck, and I was driving off, and I looked in my rearview mirror, and I didn't know it, but the one that had signaled him from where I hadn't seen, he had been coming up on the running me behind the log road. He was on the log road running behind me. I don't know how far back, but as I was driving off, they come running up together, and I seen them look at each other, and I looked back at my truck. I don't know, you know, what that meant, but I got the heck out of there, and I quit deer hunting there. And about a week, two later, a good friend of mine that lived not far from there, probably a couple miles, 3 miles, Wayne, I asked him, I said, will you go back with me and get my deer stand? He said, why? He said, you put it up, didn't you? I said, well, yeah. Why can't you get it out? He said, it ain't raining or nothing. It ain't wet. And I said, no, I just want a little company. He said, okay. So we get in the truck. He's a big guy. He's about 6'8", about 400. And we get back there. I drove all the way back there. And what I do, I drive to where I was going. And my stand was a real heavy-duty custom-built pipe stand. It made out of heavy-duty pipe. I mean, thick, that kind of almost like a drill stem pipe I used in oil field. And what I do, I put it up against the truck. I stand, put it back in my truck, back up, and then just get in the back of the truck, walk it back up, or sometimes get a rope tied around it and throw it around another tree and pull it up that way. Well, the deer stand, I had a lock on it, a big heavy-duty lock with a chain, where nobody could steal it. I mean, it would also serve to keep the stand in place, you know, kind of like a brace. That stand had been wrapped around that tree. It looked like a vine. I mean, yeah, I ain't joking. 10-foot stand, it had been wrapped halfway around and coming back around to the north. I mean, it was tight against the tree, too, tight. Well, Wayne asked me, he said, what's going on here? He said, you telling me everything? I said, I don't know, Wayne. I don't know what happened. And in the back of my head, I knew what happened. Anyway, he got to looking. He said, you know, you couldn't have got a four-wheeler in here or a pickup truck in here to do this because there's other trees not far from this tree, a circle of this tree. You couldn't have got them in here. He said, how the heck did this happen? I said, I don't know. Well, I left there and moved on down to some other locations, like about 8-9 miles from there. Later on, I spotted some more creatures in the woods, but I didn't have no encounters with them because, you know, they were 100 yards from me, and they didn't see me. So it didn't take long before I pulled out of that spot, and deer hunting just never was the same anymore because I was always looking over my shoulder, and I hear a bird whistle or something, I'd go crazy, I like getting on a stand 5:30 in the morning when it's dark. I'd wait an hour and a half for daylight, you know, let my scent die down and noise. I couldn't do that no more because I was too afraid. You know, I'd get out there about 7-8 o'clock, and I used to hunt sundown. I couldn't do that no more. I'd leave out 4:30, you know, and it was miserable. And so I just finally kind of backed off of it, you know. But I know people deny it, but don't think it's true. But, you know, we do have creatures out there that's walking and breathing the air that we breathe.
What? We also have on the line, joining Mike, we also have Debbie. Debbie, you're there?
I'm here.
All right.
Thank you for having us on tonight.
Hey, not a problem. Now, Mike, you kept this to yourself for numerous years. Why did you decide to finally come out with it?
Well, at the time that happened, everything was pretty quiet about the Bigfoot world. There wasn't nothing going on, no talk, nobody seeing anything, and it was pretty quiet. And I didn't want people to think that I was an idiot or a liar, and you know, I had a lot of other good hunting friends, and I didn't want them to think that I was a lunatic or something to everybody. But anyway, when all these shows, Mysterious Encounters, come out with Alden Williams, I felt vindicated, and listening to all those people's encounters and talks, and then I started talking, telling people about it, you know, and you know, I've had some a lot of criticism, you know, but you know, not long from there, this guy, old man that lived about two and a half miles from where I got chased out of the woods, he rode into the BFRO, and he told him, he said one night he went out to take his little dog out to use the bathroom, and he was standing out in the yard, and he had a utility shed just a few feet away, and street light under it, and he looked over there in the shadow, and there was a creature standing by the utility shed, and the utility shed where the tin had to come off the top was 8 foot tall. And he said the creature's head stuck above that, and said he stunk, and he grabbed his little dog up, went in the house, he got his pistol, and the creature had left, but he could hear him walking off through the woods. So that was a couple miles, 3 miles from where I got chased out of the woods. Man, I felt vindicated. I got my wife. I said, come here, look at this. You got to see this. I want you to read this. I said, now, do you see? Now, do you believe what I was telling you? I said, there it is right there. Peace, Sam. You know, and it just, I had to get it off my shoulders. It was really bothering me. I felt like I was being punished. I was an omen, you know, on my shoulders. And it was really a bad feeling.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, Debbie, I also read a little bio about you, and talk about how you decided to get into making this movie about Bigfoot.
Well, I had some background in filmmaking. I have written some scripts that have been optioned and produced in the film. And then I produced myself, along with two other people, a local documentary film. And I was really wanting to try my hand at an independent feature film, low-budget independent feature film. And I decided I wanted to go with the horror genre because it was so much easier sell. But I really am not a horror fan aficionado per se. The only thing that I could conceive of that I would be remotely interested in would be a movie about Bigfoot, because I drove from Louisiana. I worked for a law firm in Texarkana, Texas at that time, and I would drive from North Louisiana, where I lived at that time, and to Texarkana, which is about 45 minutes, and I would go through South Arkansas, and I would just always get this creepy, eerie feeling there because of the legend of Boggy Creek and the whole, you know, Fount Monster story, which I always did believe, and I've always been fascinated by it. So I just decided one day, driving to work, I'm going to make a Bigfoot movie. So I went to a friend of mine, Arlena Acree, who's head of the Film Commission in Shreveport, and I told her about my idea for the new project, and she said, oh, I have to introduce you to a friend of mine, Mike Woolley. And she said, his story is absolutely riveting. So that was the beginning. I listened to Mike's story, and I was absolutely had no doubt that this man was telling the truth. And I knew I could hear in his voice the fear that he experienced, and the fear of reprisal, you know, the fear of condemnation that he had experienced if he came out in the early years with the story. And I wanted this feature film to be at least loosely based on his experience, and I wanted it to be authentic. That was important to me. And it was important to me to get all the details right. So we started that day, from the very first day that Mike told me his story. It's been a long journey. It's been 4.5 years now since that day. And we went through many, many drafts of the project to get it right. Mike Woolley brought on his friend, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and Jeff became more or less the script critiquer, and he actually came on and played a role similar to his real-life role as professor and Bigfoot researcher in the movie. He was actually in the film, and he's also an associate producer on the project, and I think lended a lot of credibility to us getting across the story that we wanted to get across, because we wanted to make everything believable and plausible down to the last Bigfoot growl, you know, that we present in the film. And we also wanted the storyline to be plausible. We absolutely did not want a slasher film. We wanted it to be respectful of the creature and yet scary for the audience at the same time, you know, because it is entertainment, but we kept as true to the storyline as we possibly could, you know, and make it an entertaining film. So from there we went, and that's kind of the background story on the movie. But from the time that Mike came on board and we became partners in this project, I got to go out in the field and became a Bigfoot researcher with Mike in central Louisiana. So I began from the time of conception of the story to the time we filmed. I learned so much by being in the field with Mike and Jim Lansdale, his research partner now. And that's pretty much how it happened.
Nice. Yeah, when I was talking to Mike on the phone earlier in the week, we're actually neighbors. I'm in Longview, Texas, so I'm in East Texas, you know, where all the Bigfoot sightings, not too far from Caddo Lake area. And
where we filmed.
Yeah. I actually lived in Texarkana for about 15 years, so I'm very aware of the Fount Monster and all things going on there. So, yeah.
It's
that's interesting,
right.
Talk to people that are in my area, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, we don't have any of those kind of things here.
Yeah, Matt's up in Chicago.
let alone a forest.
Now, Mike, have you told it to I won't say experts, so there's no experts in any of the fields out there, but credible guys in the Bigfoot world, have you gotten to share your stories with them?
Yeah, I've talked to a lot of people, and I was talked to a told one of the Texas, the BF4O of Texas. I went to a event in Tyler, Texas in 2010. And one of the main men, I call him one of the colonels, after he heard my story, he asked me, he said, was you doing LSD? Was you smoking marijuana? Did you have a lot to drink? Was you dropping acid? And he labeled me as a drug head, and I was on dope, and I was seeing things. So that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's just like in the paranormal as well. You know, if I share an experience that I have with someone that has been in the field longer than me, and then they're like, "No, there's just no way, dude." You know, I know the feeling exactly. You know, because they weren't there, and you have this experience, and you know, they don't even want to have an open mind to you know, things that can happen. You know, because a lot of people talk about Bigfoot experiences or encounters, per se, and sometimes they're aggressive, sometimes they're not, but more than likely, a lot of the stories that come out, they're not aggressive. Well, a Bigfoot is a creature, you know, it's got animal instincts in it, and they're going to get pissed off just like a human being, you know? So for a Bigfoot to be aggressive, I don't see why it couldn't happen.
Well, this was a Bigfoot seminar. And, you know, when something is named Bigfoot, you know, dedicated to Bigfoot that day, that's what you go there to talk about, I thought. But
yeah.
It was real down on me, you know, and man, it was hard to swallow, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to a DPS officer. He had an encounter. It was between Marshall and Jefferson off of 59 over there, and he saw something cross the road late one night, and he went right in front of his patrol car, and it was about 8 foot tall, hairy. And it scared the hell out of him. And this is a DPS officer, you know, as a police officer, they're not going to be, you know, sharing crazy-ass stories if they're not true a lot of the time. But I was telling Mike, I actually had an encounter on Stagecoach Road, an old road over there on the other side of Marshall, between Marshall and Karnak. And, it was pretty scary, this It was a 400 or 500 pound creature that jumped out of a tree and ran off on 2 feet. And as that was going on, we heard this crazy ass squeal growl type thing. I've been out in the woods most of my life, and I'd never heard a sound like that. And it was on the other side of the road, so we were dealing with two of them. And I went and told my story to a friend of mine, Ken Gerhardt, who's cryptozoologist and been on a lot of the shows about Bigfoot and whatnot. And he told me, he said, "Kevin, you had a Bigfoot encounter." He said, "I've heard stories like similar to yours before." And so he goes, you know, you're up in East Texas. He goes, the majority of the sightings we have is over in East Texas and in Louisiana because of the piney woods, all the thick forest that this part of the state and Louisiana has.
I do have one question, though. Like, when it comes to all these Bigfoot encounters, especially when it comes to hunters, and I understand not killing the creature, animal, you know, being, whatever you want to consider it, but, I mean, why hasn't anybody even, like, wounded one and just hog-tied it or something? I mean, you know, just to say, hey, this isn't bullshit, this is here, this is true.
Well, I think I'll try to answer your question. These creatures...
Sorry, it's kind of, you know, out of the blue.
No. I understand. I've been asked that question 1,000 times. And these creatures are very elusive. I've been on my deer stand before, and I've seen... I guess it was a big creature, a female and a juvenile one day, creeping through the woods out from my deer stand about 100 yards, 125 yards, and you couldn't hear them move. And what they would do, the male would go ahead a little few feet and signal for the other ones to come up when it was clear. They were very cautious. I seen one day, he was moving through the woods. Anytime he heard something, he would duck behind a tree and hug that tree. And you could not, and I couldn't see him. He would blend in with the tree and look like it was part of the tree. You know, and another thing, if you ever get in a situation like I was, he had me so intimidated that I felt like that high-powered rifle was a BB gun, and all I would have done was pissed him off if I shot him. You know, he had me afraid. I wasn't no way I was going to pull a trigger because I thought it'd make him mad, and he really killed me then. it's just... I think, you know, people talking about they were growled at and all stuff. I think they were giving them a warning to get out of their area, you know. They're territorial. They have areas that they stay in. And they'll protect it no matter what. And they will also protect it from other Bigfoots. You know, they'll get in a fight with another Bigfoot, you know, if he's coming into their area. That's just how family-oriented they are. But the rest of your question, I feel like a lot of people see them, they just want to get the hell out of there, you know, when they run into one. It's just, man, you want to get out of there fast as you can because you don't know what you're looking at. You know what you can't, your mind just starts playing, you know, just racing, and it's a bad situation to be in. And as far as hog tying one or trying to catch one, that's going to be nearly impossible because a lady told me one time up in Wisconsin, she had a farm, and what she would do, she had some dairy cattle, and when the cows would get ready to have a calf, she had a little barn up behind her house, close to her house. And she would bring them in that barn, you know, where they could have a safe environment and clothes. And she could watch after them until they had their calf and they were safe for them to go back to the herd. She said, middle of one night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, all hell broke loose out there. And she went out to see what had happened. And she said that shed was about, you know, 150 feet. The little barn that she kept on the end of the cow, it was about 150 feet from her house, and she had lights. She turned the lights on where it would shine back there off her house, and there was a street light. She said, when she got halfway to that little barn, these two big, tall, 7-8 foot black hairy creatures come out. One of them was carrying a newborn calf. And she said when they walked on out and got away, she went in there and said they had almost completely 90% twisted the head off of that cow. Now, you're talking probably 1,000, 1,500-pound cow. Now, can you imagine what it takes to do that? Is there a man out there that can come, you know, close to being able to twist the neck, tear a neck off a cow? So, you know, hand to hand, that'd pinch your head off like a chick. I mean, well, there's no way we could compare it to their strength.
Oh, yeah. Now, I interviewed another guy that has a Bigfoot team on the show, and he kind of had the same kind of experience as far as he had a Bigfoot come in front of him and come out from behind a tree, and he was probably in reaching distance of this Bigfoot, and he didn't have his camera rolling or anything, and he said, you know, his first instinct, his body just kind of froze, you know, it was just, and this is coming from somebody that purposely goes out in the woods looking for these creatures. And he said, when you had that experience, you know, you kind of have that flight reaction when you finally come face to face with something that you've been looking for, you know, and so they didn't get any kind of recording on it because they got the hell out of there. You know, this thing was right there in their face, and they're like, oh, shit, and they took off, you know.
Well, there's one thing, like we're doing right now, sitting here talking about it. You know, we could talk all the hype and oh, boy, I'll do this when I see one, and I'll do that, you know, I'll do this and I'll do that, and I'll, you know, that's one thing. But when you get out there and you actually get, you know, you have encounter face to face, that's where the crap hits your fan, buddy.
Yeah, definitely. I have another caller here. This is Brian Sons. He hosts a radio show on our network on Thursdays, and he's an avid paranormal investigator and Bigfoot hunter. So let me get him on here. Brian, you there?
Yeah, man. Hey, how's it going?
Doing great. We're talking Bigfoot tonight.
Hey, Brian, what's going on, man?
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, I know. We talked about it on Thursday, and upcoming Thursday, actually, we're continuing.
Yeah, yeah. We were. I mean, the show lasted a lot longer than what any of us, I think, anticipated, but we were having some good discussions and good debates on it.
Now,
definitely for sure.
Let me turn back to Debbie and get her back in the conversation as well. Now, Debbie, you mentioned earlier you shot your movie. You shot it in Caddo Lake area?
We did. We shot it. Actually, it was right on the Louisiana-Texas line. You could walk over to just, you know, 10 steps past where we were shooting the soundstage area, and there was Texas. So, yeah. And it's a great location because it has all the swampy, the Spanish moss, the spookiness of the big, you know, the big trees in the water, cypress trees and all. And there have also been a massive number of Bigfoot sightings in and around Caddo Lake over the years.
Yeah, well,
as you guys well know, living over there.
Yeah. I was about to say that's a hot spot in itself around that lake. I know a lot of people that have had encounters over there.
Yes, and so in fact, the people that own the house where we actually use as a staging area, just a few weeks prior to the filming, he, who's also a hunter who's been in the woods all his life, heard this earth-shaking growl that sounded like an African lion, he described. And he said, I've never heard anything like it in these woods before. And he said, I think there was something out there, like a Bigfoot, that he said, I think it's there. He said, I couldn't go back to sleep the rest of the night. So that was right where we were filming.
That's interesting that you say that. One of my teammates and I, we were in the woods probably about a week ago, and we had something roar at us, and we know all the wildlife around here. There's not really too many large predators, and she went looking on her own, and the closest thing, in animal kingdom that she could find that sounded anything like it was a gorilla.
Interesting.
And, it scared the mess out of us. It was a pretty wild night. And we returned to the same area last night, we didn't have any luck last night.
Wow. Well, and you guys mentioned something a while ago about the paralysis that people seem to experience when they see. And though I didn't have the encounter that Mike had, I had the experience when we were doing some Bigfoot research 2 years ago down in central Louisiana. These two women that lived way out in the country, not too far from Natchitoches, Louisiana, had just been terrorized. They said they had been terrorized by this Bigfoot. They would come beat on their house every night, and they would growl, and they would roar. And so I spent the night with one of them in the back of the house where they said the chicken house is back like 20 feet behind the house, and they said all the big growls sounded like they would come from the chicken house. So I thought, okay, I'm going to have my camera here. I'm going to have the setup. When I hear that growl in the middle of the night, I am going to get up and try to snap a picture, and I want to see this thing. Well, at 1:19 in the morning, I heard this earth-shaking roar. And there was a build-up to it, like African lions do, like, oh, 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 you know, to maybe stun the prey. And then the big roar that you could just feel yourself vibrate. And
well,
I was absolutely paralyzed.
Exactly,
I was paralyzed. I couldn't get up. I couldn't look out the window. Forget about the camera. I was in terror. I mean, even though I was in the house, I thought, this is real. I mean, this is real. That's Bigfoot. And so it really, I don't know if it was the vibration itself or maybe the infrasound capability. And I don't know what it was, but it paralyzed me. I couldn't do what I had planned to do, you know, from within the safety, quote, of the house. I just couldn't do it.
That's exactly the description that my teammate that she gave and I gave as well. I think in our case, we kind of stuck up behind it because we were walking on a trail that was mostly pine needle kind of grass, so it was real quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reached the area where it went from pine needle to real crunchy, like oak leaves and things of that nature. And I remember telling her just then, I said, if there's anything out here, it's going to know we're here now.
Mm-hmm.
And just instantly, we heard this humongous roar. And, I mean, we could feel it. And it scared the heck out of her. I mean, her first instinct was to run. And that whole night, it was like something was kind of trailing us. And the next day, we went back, and I found some interesting, a track that's suspicious. It's not really indicative of a Sasquatch, but it's a suspicious track. But I also found, and I videoed it, a tree that had holes in it that looked as though something was poking in it and prying. It was the bark was completely gone, but these holes were at least a silver dollar size.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a woodpecker, because I've seen those. Those are much, much smaller. And this thing, I'll put in the video, I stuck my finger in it, and I could have put at least 2 or 3 fingers in this hole in the tree,
mm-hmm.
and all the timber was pried out. So,
wow.
And on the other side of this little neck of woods is a large field where deer like to graze. And, I mean, my only conclusion would be that this thing was either sitting in the woods scoping out this field,
mm-hmm.
or it was actually there at that tree poking and prodding at something, maybe to get some grubs or something of that matter.
Mm-hmm.
But,
wow.
There, you know, in my area, there's hardly any predators at all, to be honest
mm-hmm.
with you, as far as bear or wolf. I'm in Mississippi, north central Mississippi. And, you know, she went on her own looking online, just listening to different animal sounds and roars. And the closest thing she came to was a gorilla that does this one particular roar. And, you know, she sent it to me, and sure enough, I mean, it just sent chills up my back.
Yeah. And Mike, in your experience with your encounter, it gave a loud roar as well, did it not?
It sure did.
And what was weird about the roar that I heard, and I guess we can kind of compare if we want. What was weird about the roar that I heard was it was real deep and guttural, but at the same time there was this kind of high pitch in there with it.
Right. Mine was basically the same as that. About midpoint, it got a lot, seemed like a lot of bass in it, and, you know, if you describe it
right.
like that, but it and then he kind of eased down with a low growl, you know.
Right, that's how this was, too. And you know, I tried to describe it to someone, and I mean, the best way I can describe it is if you imagine the largest dog in the world, the massive, if you can imagine that, mixed with an alligator, and it was able to roar.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dog is the higher pitch of it, and then the gator would be the low resonance of it.
You know,
and this thing was probably about 75 feet from us when it happened.
Well, I was fixing to say that. If you heard it that loud and that intense as you say it was, you were on top of him.
Oh, we
and
were. I'm sorry.
He was letting you know
we were just a little bit too close. That's exactly what I. That's exactly the feeling that we had got, because, you know, we came around this corner, and the only thing between the trail that we were on and in the deer field, the only thing that was there was a stretch of woods probably about 100 feet wide. He was in that neck of that stretch of the woods.
Yeah,
I think he had his back to us, and then he heard us.
Well, most probably at that, he was out that time of night. He was out hunting. He was on a hunting mission. And I guarantee you there was another one not far from him, because what I've seen, they hunt in pairs or more of them.
My instant reaction when I heard it was I roared back. And looking back now, it probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. But we continued on down the trail. Neither one of us want to go in that direction, and looking back, I probably should have. But we continued down the trail to a deer stand, and we were up in the deer stand maybe 10 minutes, and the next sound we heard, it sounded like a coyote just getting ripped apart. I mean, it wasn't the typical coyote sound that you'd be up. It was only one. It sounded like it was really in pain, just getting torn apart.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I heard they follow coyotes. I heard that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I spoke to many people about it. I've even had discussions with Cliff Barrockman about it from Finding Bigfoot. And we all kind of agree that they either follow Bigfoot they follow coyotes, or coyotes follow them. There's some relation between the two.
Were you near Creek Bottom?
Oh yeah, it's in fact the area when we went back the next day. It's a bunch of little streamlets all coming converging, and very marshy in that area.
Right, well,
but there's creeks and streams all through it. There's a huge pond that kind of has a spillway that runs out into that area as well. Like if it overflows, it drains. There's a huge culvert that comes into that area from the big deer field. So there's a lot. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of little waterways up in there.
Well, see, that's what they like. They like to run creeks. You know, they can feed up and down them. There's a lot of food sources there for them. And also, that's kind of like their highway they use. You know, like we use highways, driving down highways. They use those as navigation points.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's. But you know, the thing is, where I live in North Mississippi, there's a lot of ravines and a lot of large streams and creeks and things of that nature. In this particular area, there's a couple of ponds. And most of the creeks and little streams that go back there, the widest is about 3 foot, and it's a spider web of them. So you know it's in some areas it's a little bit more marshy than in others.
Well, see, that's a good area for them. You know, they got the water, places they can hide. You know, food. You know. There's deer right there. You said there was a good place for the deer to eat. Well, they got deer there. You know, that's one of their main food sources. So they pretty much got everything they need right there.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubts of what it was we heard. I mean, even as recent as today, I went looking at different animal sounds as far as the area that I live in Mississippi, and I still cannot find anything that sounded any remotely like that. And here's the thing. I don't know from the experience you had. I'm sorry I missed all that at the beginning of the show. But I after that experience, that whole night, the next night, I just can't get the sound out of my head. The sound was so unique. I just can't get that roar out of my head. I mean, that whole night I laid up. I couldn't even get to sleep. Because it just kept kind of replaying in my head, and all the circumstances surrounding it, the vibration of it, it was so intense that, you know, I've seen Sasquatch before in other areas, in Florida and further south in Mississippi, but I've heard howls, I've heard wood knocks, but I've never had one roar at me, and it was. It gave me a much more, I guess, aggressive side to them that I hadn't experienced before. So it's got me a little bit different now when I go out at night. You know, it's got me a little bit more on the defensive.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and you can take this to the bank. That night that happened, whatever creature made that growl, you didn't want to come face to face with him that night. Trust me.
Oh no, because it was just me and her out there, and I mean, you know, we didn't have guns. We had machetes. We had mace. But even that would is kind of pointless and useless against something that, you know, like that. I have no doubts that it would have been just a minimal defense. I wish that I had my audio digital recorder with me. Unfortunately, we were on our way to the deer stand. That's where we were going to do all our knocks and our sounds and everything. So we were kind of in route. So we really didn't expect anything along the way, because we figured our footfalls would, you know, scare anything at all off anyway. And we were going to wait till we got to our location, and then we were going to start doing everything. But this thing kind of met us, and what it was we were going down a trail, and we made a left-hand turn on the trail, and if you'd have kept straight, you'd have went through the 200 feet of woods, and then you'd have come to the field, the deer field. So when once we made that turn, we went probably about 25 feet. That's when we started hitting those crunchy leaves, and it roared from. In other words, if we'd have kept straight on that path, we'd have ran smack into its butt. I have no doubts about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, in all my times, and I go out all the time at night, and in all my times, it was probably one of the most intense that I've had.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, nine times out of ten, when you have those encounters, you're always unprepared. You know, it just seems like it falls that way.
Oh yeah, but I do really believe exactly what you said, that we surprised it. It wasn't expecting anyone else or any other noise out there. I think it heard the crunching of the leaves, and I'm sure it has good enough vision that it could see us through the trees.
No, I think what happened is he was on his way to that meadow to kick back and wait for a deer to come in, you know, where he could waylay it. And what happened, you were tailing him, you know, which you didn't know. And
there was no walking sound. I mean, there was no walking sound at all in the woods. I honestly believe that he was already set up over there, and we kind of came behind him and then turned. And when he heard us, that's when he noticed, you know, that we were there. That's my opinion, that he was already set up over there. But either that was him messing with that tree, poking the holes in it, or he was sitting there watching across the field, you know, doing a hunt. But either way it goes, he didn't expect us. And when almost instantly that our foot started crunching on those leaves and making that noise, that's when that roar happened.
Well, you know, evidently, you remember how I told you they're very stealthy, how they could walk through the woods on those leaves that you walk on. He can walk on those leaves and not make a sound. You know, for him to let out a growl, a roar, means one of, you know, two things. First off, he was hunting, and, you know, they're the best hunters in the world. He must have been pretty startled for him to growl like that, because he blew any chances he had for a good while of getting a deer. I want to tell you something about deer. All my years of hunting, if there's a Sasquatch in the woods anywhere near there, you can forget about deer hunting. Deer will not hang around where they're at. They will not hang around where they're at. You know, I mean, that's just something that you know, that's the way it is. But, yeah, you must have startled him, because he probably was set up hunting. And, you know, he must have really got intense when he heard y'all. He must have really thought y'all were a big threat for him to growl like that, you know, because...
It was just the one roar. There was no running through the woods, no footfall after that, because I was expecting something to come charging towards us. There was none of that. It was just that one roar.
Mm-hmm. Was y'all shining lights? Was y'all shining lights or anything?
Well, I had my headlamp on, but we weren't even shining into the woods. We were just straight down, kind of on the trail.
Mm-hmm. Well, he saw you.
I'm sure he heard the crunch and he saw the lights, and that's when he gave her that one roar. And then she started to run. My reaction was holy shit, and then I just roared back. And waited. Didn't move. We just kind of waited for a little while. Didn't hear anything. And she didn't want to go back in that direction around that curve again. So we just decided, well, let's just go down to the deer stand and climb up there. But the whole time in deer stand, we could hear bipedal footfall around us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he was circling it. But it wasn't heavy. It was like it was almost like it was. We could hear it, but it was almost like it was trying to sneak.
Well, I think what he was doing, he was letting you know that you were busted, that they were in the area. And I'll tell you something else. When he did that growl, any other Bigfoots that was near there or away from there, they were on their way. They back each other up. They're very family-oriented. I mean, they stick together. And
oh, yeah.
If there was any around there, you had them on top of you. And they were no doubt probably circling that deer stand.
And I'm thinking
yeah.
they came across that coyote and they tore it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I've never heard a coyote sound like this. This coyote... It was bone chilling. This coyote sounded like it was just completely getting his butt handed to him.
Yeah,
it's kind of like my experience, like I was talking about earlier, where that loud screeching growl kind of sound came from one side of the road off in the woods. And then whatever was up in the tree behind us jumped out and took off running on 2 feet. So kind of like we walked up on them on either side, you know, up on the road, and they were out in the woods on each side, and one signaled to the other, and that's when it jumped out of that tree, and, like, lots of branches, big-ass branches fell to the ground, and we heard, you know, just earth, you know, you could hear them just thumping, you know, loud-ass, bipedal running off.
Right.
So it was kind of like we walked up on them, and one warned to the other one, plus warned us we were up on them, and that's what happened. Now, Debbie, what is this movie that you made? What kind of, give us a generalized synopsis of what this movie is about, except, you know, without giving up the
Well, the storyline goes that there is a young girl who is a Bigfoot researcher, and she's actually getting her PhD in primate anatomy and, you know, everything that you would do to become a Bigfoot researcher authentically. And she comes to research all the new and current Bigfoot sightings in North Louisiana, particularly in the Oil City area on Caddo Lake, and because she wants to be on the cutting edge of, you know, finding a Sasquatch. So she goes missing. And her sister, who is a big radio, she's a famous radio host, a television host, has to leave her job and go in the woods look for her sister because the police department in Oil City have just botched up. They're really not doing anything to investigate because they think she's just run off with a guy or something. You know, they're not taking it seriously. So her sister employs the use of a Native American shaman. And the guy that Jeff Cameron, Dr. Cameron, who Dr. Jeff Meldrum plays the role of, is called. And his son, in the movie, he has a son, Connor Cameron, who's also a Bigfoot researcher. And he and the radio show host used to were in a relationship, long-term relationship, and broke up because of the whole Bigfoot mythology, which she said was going to destroy her career if she stayed with him. But now Anna doesn't have any choice but to call in the troops because she's got to find her sister, who is her only living family member left. There's a lot. There's, you know, it's a complicated story, but essentially the Mike Woolley character, who he plays a very reclusive character, he actually, we reenact his story, you know, in the tree, you know, with Big on the on the deer stand, you know, seeing Bigfoot. We kind of have that reenacted and him telling the story in the movie. But we kind of make him a scary character, too, in a way, because he is so reclusive. And so that's how the storyline goes. And we'll save the rest for when the movie comes out, which we hope will be within the next month or so. We're on the tail end of the edits, and we hope that everybody's going to be excited about it as we are.
Where will the movie be released? Where will people be able to find it?
We are going to be selling it from our website. So we're going to do we'll get a distribution deal, and we've got some networks that are interested in it and are interested in seeing the rough cut when we get it to where we feel like it. We want it. We get the Bigfoot sounds and everything right in it. We're going to send it to one of the networks that has expressed interest, and then probably Vimeo. We'll probably release it through Vimeo, self-distribution, and then the foreign distribution, we will look at the offers that we get coming in, and we'll surely do at least a hybrid deal where we can at least keep the rights to sell the DVDs and downloads, you know, independently. We want to retain those rights. Just because we want to maintain a semblance of control. We don't want somebody coming in, taking the movie and redoing it and changing the whole vision of what we spent 4.5 years creating. That would break our hearts if something like that happened. So I would prefer to self-distribute rather than let that happen and let someone exploit it and make it become something that we never intended for it to be, because we worked too hard to get it to, you know, the point where it is now.
Right. Well, definitely. I remember, and you guys know because you're from this area, I think it was last year they did a filming of a Bigfoot movie over in Mineola, Texas, Bigfoot Wars. So
I have heard of that, yes. Yeah, I know it seemed to be released.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Bigfoot's such a and here recently, you know, we even got one guy who I'm not going to mention his name, but he claimed to have killed one and said he's going to take it on tour
around
the country.
Yeah.
Monica, have you heard about that? Mike, you there?
Yeah, go ahead. Can you repeat that? They were getting some noise on his end.
Yeah, I'm hearing some background noise too. Have you heard about the guy that was out looking for Bigfoot down in San Antonio, and he claimed to have shot and killed one, and is going to take it on tour around the United States, the body?
Is that the Rick Dyer story?
Yeah, I've been following that. I knew that was a hoax or a bunch of crap from day one because...
Yeah, I did too.
He kind of had a deal back a couple years ago. You know, he was in with some others. And the guy's credibility sucks. And so when I heard what he was doing, I knew he was up to some... Yeah, trying to make some money. So I think he's going to have to deal with a Department of Justice, you know, I think he's going to be in some hot water before this is all over.
Yeah, there's petitions going around to get him for fraud.
Well, you know, and I just know the way the state of Texas works. Anything that you kill out in the woods or anything, any kind of wildlife, and then you go and talk about it, you know, openly to everybody, you're going to have game wardens on your ass. Out of the woodwork trying to find out what the hell you killed and if you had a permit for it.
That's right.
Yeah, he's lucky so far.
He's taking money from people basically charging them to view it and so forth and so on. So, that's the reason for the petition for fraud, because you know he went and made these promises to people and charged them and took their money based on a lie, on something that he can't produce. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, that takes a pretty low class person to do that.
Yeah.
Well, the positive to it is that no one will ever take him seriously again. So the chance of him doing this stuff again is hopefully very slim.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think. Go ahead.
Oh, I was waiting on you.
All I was going to say is, well, I think he dug himself his own grave this time.
Yeah.
I think that something does need to happen to him, because I think that society at large needs to make an example of these people that do this stuff like that, that put on these hoaxes. That's the only thing that'll 100% completely stop it, is for there to be some kind of punishment for it.
Yeah.
It should be.
You know, I've heard accounts before from different people, but to me, the accounts that sound more true and realistic and things like that have always been people that have been out in the woods hunting, and they've hunted all their lives, and they come across this thing while they're hunting. You know, they're not out there looking for Bigfoot, and this thing, you know, comes in their paw. You know, I always find their stories more valid than some of the other stories that I hear involving Bigfoot.
You know, one thing that I've noticed about people who are out hunting and stuff like that do have Bigfoot accounts, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Most of the time, I mean, you're out wee hours of the early morning, you're tired, you're fatigued, you're sitting in the same place, there's not, you know, much going on, and any sounds, and this is just human nature, but any sounds get amplified. And it could be something simple, but to you it seems more meaningful. Not saying that anybody's accounts of what Evan talked about tonight are that, but there's a lot of accounts that I think could contribute to that.
Yeah. Right.
Mike,
you were when you had this encounter though. It was late in the afternoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had overslept, you know, and it happened around 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah. So, was it cloudy or was the sun out that day?
Oh, it was a beautiful sunshiny bluebird day. No clouds out, about 30 to 35 degrees, somewhere in there.
Yeah. So, yeah, you didn't have any, so you had a clear view of this sucker, especially when you looked at it through your rifle.
Oh, yeah. He was about 15 yards, no more than 50 feet from me.
Well, Mr. Mike, where are you located? This took place.
Can you repeat that?
I'm sorry. Where are you located that this all took? I'm not asking for GPS coordinates or anything. I'm just the state, the area, the country.
Okay. Have you heard of Manny, Louisiana?
That yeah, I'm originally from Morgan City, Louisiana. So, yeah, I'm...
Okay. I was hunting about 4 miles... from the west of Manny, in a game reserve that covers several thousand acres.
Right.
And isn't that near the Kisatchie National Forest, Mike? Isn't it kind of right there?
Well, it's probably 40 miles away.
Okay.
Right, because I'm in, like I said, I'm in North Central Mississippi. I'm right, I mean, excuse me, my front door is the Tom Bigbee National Forest. And that's kind of the area that I had several of mine. It's not the area that I had the roar. I was in a new location that it's about 30 acres privately owned that no one really goes on where the roar took place. And I'm definitely, like I said, I went back there last night. Of course, it was kind of raining, so we didn't get much activity as far as Sasquatch goes, or much activity at all last night. So either it was hunkered down due to the rain, or it kind of decided to move into a new territory after the roar incident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm wondering, if someone's ever looked into all the accounts, which, you know, there's thousands and thousands of them, but if ever anybody's ever tried to, you know how, like, do it and any other kind of game, well, they got some background noise.
yeah.
Kind of got the, you know how game has kind of have a pattern to them, you know, depending on the weather, the moon phase, whatnot, whether they're moving or bedded down or whatnot. And I'm wondering if there's a correlation that, you know, especially deer patterns on these Bigfoot.
Well, I mean, I don't know, you know, as far as deer patterns, because I know in my area, the deer are always there everywhere. I personally don't know. I've sat here and I've tried to figure it out. I've looked at Google Earth maps left and right to see, okay, well, this is the best for it to move from point A to, say, point B. This would be the best area because it's got the most wood cover. I've done stuff like that, but I think locking down a pattern is, you know, there's a lot of people that think that they migrate, and there's a lot of people that think that they don't migrate, that they just kind of stay in one particular maybe 20, 50-mile area.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I think you're correct. I don't think they migrate.
Right. That's what I lean towards, too. I think there's just a certain amount in different particular areas. Now, of course, they had to migrate to get there at some point in time, but as far as, you know, migrating with the seasons, moving back and forth, I doubt that. I do know that in my area, I have more activity in the fall and in the spring than any other time of the year.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, getting back to the migration theory, guess is why would they want to migrate? You know, because if they migrated up north in the winter, all they're going to do is put themselves in more harsh conditions. You know,
that's right.
The further north you go, the worse it's going to get. It's going to be harder to get food. It's going to be tough trying to, you know, sleep and rest in that cold. So I think, you know, they got everything down here they need, and the food sources, you know. I think they can almost stay here.
I agree 100% with you, Mr. Mike. I believe that they alter their diet depending on the season. Say in the spring and so forth, it'll be more berries. In the winter, it'll be more of a protein base. And then I also believe that in the fall, it's more of the nuts and the acorns and stuff like that.
If anything possible, you probably have more up north that migrate down here.
Yeah, that's what I would think as well. See, this is the closest animal that I kind of related to would be a bear. Bears don't migrate. They do hibernate. We don't know if Sasquatch hibernate or not. I seriously doubt it. I think they would have a much different metabolism than a bear.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, bears do not migrate. They just they're omnivores. They live off the land and get whatever they can. Opportunists, if you will.
Well, you know, if they're going to hibernate, it'd be in the winter, I would suspect. And that's when I saw all the ones I saw mostly.
Yeah, right. That's my exact point. You know, there's numerous accounts and reports of them in the winter. Like I said, I don't think they hibernate. I think they just alter their diet. Yeah, I kind of associate Bigfoot with like the survival show, someone out there trying to survive. You're gonna take whatever you can at that moment.
Yeah,
you
I'll
know,
tell you somebody.
Like a fugitive.
Well,
you're gonna take every opportunity you can.
Right. I'll tell you somebody that the creature, the Bigfoot creature, has woke up is that Les Stroud. I think they really put a shaking up on him, you know.
I agree. I don't agree with Todd Standing's images of this, quote, Bigfoot. That wasn't a real Bigfoot. That his sister is a makeup artist. I mean, unless Bigfoot has a better shaving and beard trimming technique than I do, that was not a Bigfoot.
Right.
Because that mustache on that Bigfoot was perfectly trimmed. I can't even trim my mustache that neatly.
Well, maybe Bigfoot come to him to get it trimmed.
Yeah.
Maybe Bigfoot's using his sister there.
If you've seen any, to me, the images that he displays as being a Sasquatch, one of them looks like a Chewbacca mask that some of the hair was pulled off, and another one looks like an Ewok mask. There's yet the child one that he claims is 5 years old. I don't know how he got that. You know, was he the one that delivered it? But the child one that he claimed was 5 years old looks like an Ewok mask that he took some of the hair off and put hair in different areas. It looks nothing like any Sasquatch that I've seen.
Well, you know, he's got a radio show up north. I'm sure that you've heard of that. They've brought in a friend of mine, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, and he's going to be one of the co-hosts on it. I was kind of curious to why he did that. But, you know, everybody pretty much knows about Todd Standing and about, you know, I was kind of wondering about, you know, why he did that.
Well, I've Jeff posted on his Facebook page that, for example, for the cryptid, the swamp beast, that fiasco, he posted that he wasn't involved with the show. They just came to him for an interview about Bigfoot. And then they edited it and cut it and threw it into the show. Knowing Jeff, I would think that the only reason he'd be involved with this with Todd Standing is to put a little bit of facts behind it all.
Yeah, you're probably correct. I've thought about that. Also, this cryptid, the swamp beast, I'm really let down in that. I think that's professional actors. They got in there acting and... This is just a movie. It's not nothing really about truth going on there.
No. It is a movie. It is actors. They based a little bit off of different various reports that they got from down in South Louisiana. The thing I didn't like, I watched the series, and the thing I didn't like about it was they kind of jumped everywhere with it. You know, from Bigfoot to Rougarou to Spirit to shape shifting, and it's like, okay, well, you know, lock it down. You can't say it's everything. And I think that what people are seeing down in South Louisiana is actual Sasquatch. They have named it Rougarou, but because of South Louisiana, they threw in the whole voodoo aspects of it into that. And basically, just like any other all Louisiana dish, they threw a little bit of everything and made a gumbo out of it.
Yeah.
To where to where now you have it being, you know, a shapeshifter, a demon that attaches itself to a human and a spirit, and you know, it's just kind of went too far with the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they hyped it up real, real good, and I thought it was going to be a good, interesting show, but I really let down in it. I quit watching it because of the crap, you know, the BS of filling.
Yeah, it was good entertainment, but as far as factual, you kind of had to pick and choose out of it the facts that you know, wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're making, you know, what PO'd me is they're making the people down in South Louisiana look like they're a bunch of demon chasers or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole, what's that, Cajun Beast. I don't even know if that's a factual, if that's an actual team, a real team, or it's just actors for the show.
I don't think it's a real team from what I've heard. I've talked to Rob Godet. He was on our film several times, and he has a lot of detailed knowledge about it, and he said they, you know, it's just like all these other shows. They're not using the real researchers that are out in the field.
Yes, ma'am.
So just kind of destroys the credibility for the Bigfoot people, Bigfoot world.
Right, and that's kind of how I looked at it, too. It's like, okay, you know, people are going to watch this, and they're going to think this is exactly how we are. And exactly what we go out there and do, and you know, like bumping around in the dark, and then they threw the whole murder, slaughter acts aspects to it, and even when I lived in South Louisiana, I don't recall any true factual stories of any mutilations or attacks or anything of that nature.
Right,
and that's some of the aspects that frustrated me about it, because I don't like to see Sasquatch or Bigfoot portrayed as this monster or this mindless creature that goes out hunting people.
No, and I think that's a problem. It's the media tries to exploit it to sensationalize to increase their viewing audience,
right.
I think that's ultimately their downfall, because the Bigfoot world and people that are interested in the facts and something that's real, you know, with real people who are actually in the field doing research, you know, that's not what they want. So if they would target the audience, like you said a while ago, if they would really target the audience and be real about it and finally focus and narrow it down instead of throwing mud against the wall, just hoping, oh, we'll pick viewers who want to see the Rougarou or the Lugaroo, who's the werewolf in the swamps in South Louisiana, you know.
See, that's kind of how I felt the whole show was. Like, they had this big, they drew out this big dartboard and said, okay, let's throw this in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's how it really didn't have any solid structure, in my opinion.
Well, I think
the executive producers
think, you know, they know that Bigfoot is a hot topic right now. So it's like, okay, let's put together a show about Bigfoot. But they're missing the mark, I think, you know, because they're not bringing the right people in. You know, they're bringing the actors, which I know you have to have some of that, you know, for professionalism, but they could choose from the true Bigfoot researchers, the real people like Mike, who've had the experience and can bring in that authenticity, because our audiences now are savvy. Mm-hmm. They know the difference. And when Mike goes on and talks, people know, they just feel instinctively, they know he's telling the truth, that this is a real story. And I think that's, if we could have executive producers for these shows that had that kind of belief and that confidence, they would have a winner. They could put together a winner.
Right, right. And see, that's what I'd love to see. I'd love to see a true-to-life show about Sasquatch exploration and enthusiast, rather than the whole, you know, the whole fantasy of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if these things were really, if these things were really that destructive and that brutal, there would be so many reports of people being injured and things of that nature. Because, you know, like I tell my team, they're like, well, I don't know what's out there at night. I'm like, the same thing out there at night that's out there during the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be sleeping, but you can bet it knows you're, when you're in the woods during the day, it still knows that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know for a fact, the nighttime, anytime you're doing something in the daytime, you would feel safer in the woods in the daytime more than you would at nighttime.
Right.
And
so you would make more noise. You wouldn't be cautious
right.
about it. You wouldn't be discreet.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they really wanted us or to harm us, I think they could so easily. I would almost bet that there's so many times that these things have been within very close range of people, and the people never ever knew it.
Oh yeah.
Well, I walked by a tree one morning where one was in the tree, and I didn't know it, a cedar tree. And I brushed that cedar tree in my arm. I come within probably 5 feet of him. He could have grabbed me.
Hey. Real quick, I noticed we have 10 minutes left. If anybody wants to throw out any plugs for anything, as long as we're still on air, I mean, it's going to continue and go into archive, but...
Well, yeah. I'm going on my third... Kevin, you know this. I'm going on the third week that we're doing Sasquatch on my radio broadcast. And that's on Thursday night. And Mr. Mike and Ms. Debbie, I would love for you guys to stop over on that as well.
Oh, that'd be great.
We'd be glad to.
Yeah, and we're going to have Mike and Debbie on Terrify Radio on Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Central to 10 p.m. Central. And we're going to talk further about this experience.
Yeah, and I will be joining again, hopefully with more to say. I apologize. I was just so intrigued with what everybody's been talking about. I didn't want to interrupt.
Well, I've got a lot of. I'm 58 years old, and I started deer hunting when I was 15. So I've got several moons of fast in my deer hunting. I've got a lot of things that happen in the woods. A lot of things I tell everybody, if I told you what I've seen, you wouldn't believe.
Right. And Miss Debbie, the movie hopefully will come out in the next month or two, correct?
Yeah, Skookum the Hunt for Bigfoot will hopefully have all the little finishing touches that we want in there before it comes out. We have some beautiful, beautiful video. It was filmed with a Red camera, which is pretty much the highest level digital camera. The sound is wonderful. The people that have seen the raw footage have said, oh, I feel like I'm right in the middle of the swamp. I mean, it's pretty amazing. We have to get it edited exactly where we want it to be. We're probably going to be doing a few more pickup shots with the Bigfoot point of view in the woods, and actually the Bigfoot's stepping behind the tree and doing the hop that Mike was talking about. We need a few more of those shots to edit in to fill in the necessary gaps. So within the next month, we're going to be doing that.
Nice.
And meanwhile, people can go to the website and check everything out. We've got the DVD pre-sale on DVD, so everybody can get a discount plus be part of the test audience and get their name on the special thanks credits on the movie. So we actually want our audience to be involved in the creation of the film by giving us feedback. So that's kind of what we're doing right now.
What's the website?
www.skookum.com.
Yeah, definitely go check it out.
And we've got a Facebook fan page also, Skookum the Movie Facebook fan page, and IMDb, Internet Movie Database page. So you guys can check us out.
Yeah, I've seen a trailer for the movie when I went on and watched Mike's video on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
I came across the
mm-hmm.
trailer as well and watched it. It looks like a great movie.
Well, thank you. We feel like it's going to be very excited about it. It's turned out, I mean, our production value is so much greater than we could have ever imagined possible, given the low budget that we were operating on. We were doing a micro-budget film, but I actually ended up loving doing that because it makes you more resourceful and creative, I think, in how you devise ways to come up, with things that you need to get done to make the movie. It's incredible. I definitely want to do a sequel for this movie as soon as we get this one launched.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome. I'd love to be involved with that.
Yeah, I've been in two movies over in Shreveport. So I've seen the high budget movies. I was in the movie W with Josh Brolin. Yeah, I was a reporter in one of the scenes. I had 30 seconds of fame, but I was in the movie.
Did you end up on the cutting room floor, or you were actually in? They put you in.
No, I made the movie. Believe it or not,
I'm
gonna
have to watch it again.
I got to meet Oliver Stone and Josh Brolin and all them. It was kind of a fluke of how it all happened, but I was an extra, and I ended up being an actual talking role in it. So that was good for my acting career because I do have an acting degree, and so that was pretty pumped. Yeah, because having a theater degree and being in a movie with Oliver Stone, yeah. That was
well, we definitely need to get you for the. We need to get you for the sequel.
There you go. I got an acting degree, so I can help out in any way.
That's awesome.
I met Josh Brolin in Circuit City.
Oh, did you?
I was in Circuit City one day, and I was right before I had a really bad back injury, and I was fixing that to have back surgery. L5-S1 disc, and I was limping in there real bad, and my back, I had a tack with it real bad, and I was about to fall, and somebody come up behind me and said, "Can I help you, sir?" And it was him, and he had a black guy with him, and they were doing that movie W at the time here in Shreveport.
The other one, I was just a fan in the stands during the movie Straw Dogs during the football game. I was in that movie.
I want to play the Sasquatch. I want to play the Sasquatch.
All right. Maybe we'll use you for our pickup shot so we can get the costume on you before it gets too hot.
Now, before we go off air, we got about a minute left. Mike, do you have anything people can reach you or watch the video of your experience?
Yeah, if like Debbie just quoted you, you can go to skookonthemovie.com. I have a blog on there, and if anybody wants to talk about Bigfoot or got any questions, I'll be glad to answer them back through that blog.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, guys, for coming on tonight, and I look forward to talking to you all again on Tuesday.
Thank you
so much for
having us on. It's been great.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, we'll definitely continue on Tuesday, and I promise you I will have more to contribute.
Sounds fun.
We'll
I can't
here.
Wait.
We'll be here.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
8 o'clock.
You bet. You bet. It was a pleasure. I look forward to talking to you guys again on Tuesday as well.
We look forward to it also. Thank you.
Well, you guys have a good night.
You too.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye. Night-night.
All right. Mr. Brown, yeah. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here, bud.
Yeah,
yeah,
Matt was over there. Matt was over there sleeping or something.
No, no, I wasn't sleeping at all. I was gathering information for a further conversation on Tuesday.
Right.
So.
And Brian will get to actually hear my story of his encounter that you missed.
Yeah,
tonight.
Definitely. Because I apologize, I kind of missed that earlier. Earlier in the evening, I had a lot of things going on, but yeah, I definitely look forward to it.
Yeah, Miss Jody's missing out because she's always talking about Bigfoot, and he's going to the Cardinals game on Tuesday, so Matt's filling in for.
now, Matt, don't forget that we're doing part three on Thursday,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I know, right? No, it's kind of going to be a Bigfoot week.
Hey, there's
yeah,
nothing wrong with that. I like to change the pace.
I'm going to try to get back out between now and Thursday and maybe see if I can get a little something. But, you know, the weather's warming up, so it's kind of getting a little risky as far as snakes go.
I'm kind of thinking that, speaking of Bigfoot Week, you know what, Kevin, I'm going to contact Ken about being on Wednesday. So, get the whole crypto thing going.
Who are you talking about getting on?
Ken Gerhard.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so,
he's a good friend one, and I love him to death.
right now, Wednesday's open, so.
Well, whenever you guys need my help or whatever, just holler, you know.
Yeah, definitely will do.
And remember, Brian, next Sunday is the 3-year anniversary of my Sunday show and the network. So I can't believe it's been 3 years.
That's going to be in other words, it's going to be the same show, right?
Oh yeah. Next Sunday it'll be the show, but I invited all the hosts and co-hosts of all the shows.
Right.
To come on. And, of course, you know, we'll get probably pretty raunchy and pretty crazy, but that's the fun of it.
I kind of get that. If Jody's involved, I can understand where it's going to go.
I'll be there and be both.
Well, when you throw Matt and Dennis and then, of course, Robert and Ryan and Randy from the Debunker Boys, they can get pretty down too.
Cool.
So it should be pretty interesting.
sweet. I look forward to it.
All right.
And
well,
Nate, we're drinking Tennessee whiskey, right?
You can drink whatever the heck you want. I had enough moonshine to last me a whole year after last weekend.
Well, hey, look, Kev, if you're free Thursday, man, it's going to be me and I'm not sure at this time who my co-host is going to be, probably Billy. I think Melissa might be on there too, but I know Matt's supposed to be coming and Dennis is supposed to be getting on too, so if you want to call in too, knock yourself out.
Sure. Heck yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
I know
there's
not too many people. I'm sorry?
I said I could just come on just to give Matt and Dennis hell.
Yeah, you're pretty good at that.
I hear you.
Well, we're going to wrap things up tonight, and we'll continue talking with them on Tuesday. Do a little bit more talking about Bigfoot.
Right on. All right, guys, you have a good night. Thanks for asking me to come on in.
Yeah, man. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Take care.
All right.
So, Kevin, are you going to play us out, or are we just going to end it?
I'm going to play this out. I always play this out, my friend. Always do. All right, good night, everybody. Tomorrow night is FAPS Radio, Freaking Awesome Paranormal Show, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time, so tune in for their show. And then Matt and I will be back on Tuesday with Terrify Radio. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Consolidation. His wife took half and then taxed.